Welcome to Geek Salad, a podcast about two guys talking about their passion for anything geek, from the digital world to the not-so-digital world. Now here are your hosts, Randy and Jay, a LaRock.
Thank you, Mr. Announcer Man. Welcome, guys, to Geek Salad. I am Randy, the mischievous meeple, and with me is my good old buddy, the obsolete gamer himself, Mr. J.A. LaRock. What's up, J.A.?
What's up, what's up?
Dang, what happened? You lost your light. Like, you were nice and bright, and all of a sudden, boom, darkness.
I don't know what happened either, because basically, I didn't change the lighting. I don't know. Maybe I got darker.
It's like all of a sudden, a bulb just went, and it just died on you right in the middle of it. Oh, man. Well, welcome, guys, to the second episode of Geek Salad. The fact that you're just, like, looking up like, wait, what did one of them go out?
Yeah, that's exactly like Jeff.
Oh, this is going to be a great episode already. Oh, for today's show, we have, for our main salad, I wanted to bring up an interesting topic when I was looking around. So I follow this one website, that every week they basically show a top 10 of what's been selling on Steam. And I found literally it's been a good solid, I want to say, month and a half to 2 months, maybe even longer. But PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds has been number one on the chart. Now, for people that don't know, it is what they call a battle royale game. So PlayerUnknown, which is the guy that actually is this game is revolving around, is the gentleman that came up with the original battle royale mod for Arma 2 and Arma 3. So the reason why he kind of like, I looked into his background, he wanted to do Arma 2, Arma 3 was because Arma 2 and Arma 3 was such a great simulation for like a military shooter. He liked the fact that like, hey, like you had a very large map to cross. You had like physics in the guns and the bullets and all that stuff. So it did have bullet drop and all that. And he liked the idea. So he came up with a mod where it essentially picks 100 players. And it will drop you. You basically spawn in a plane and you're flying over an island and you basically parachute out and you start with nothing whatsoever. And in this map that they have, there's houses and buildings and stuff like that. You go and you pick up weapons and then it's a free for all, like, you know, king of the hill type of a thing. So doing that, he got picked up when H1Z1 became a thing. He actually created the mod for H1Z1, and eventually Sony decided to split that up into the H1Z1 Survival and H1Z1 King of the Kill. Now, H1Z1 King of the Kill, they wanted to make it more arcadey and all that. He still wanted to keep the realism of it. So he essentially left that and went on to become the creative director of a Korean company called Bluehole. And they basically have given him full creative control of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. And what's interesting about this is he basically announced he was doing this. Anybody who knew about these battle royales type of games, like, followed him around and all that. And it's funny because when you look at H1Z1, they say, like, hey, it's a finished game. It's ready to go. There's no more bugs. Yet you could click online and find God knows how many Twitch streamers that you'll see multiple bugs in the game. Like stuff from them parachuting down and they literally fall under the world and just fall forever and then die. To they're driving a car and they bump into a fence that should be destroyable, that they can run through it and it blows up the car and they die. You know, so stuff like that that people were like, you'll see them all the time. They'll yell at the camera like, stop saying your game's complete when it's not complete. And it's hilarious because if you look at some of the comments for PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, this is like almost like some of the top rated comments are like, this thing's in early access and it's already a better game than H1Z1, King of the Kill. But it has been a game that, like, I got it because a lot of the streamers that I watched that got me into Rainbow Six Siege and Battlefield 1 started playing it and they were just praising the game like crazy. and I got it. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go out on a whim and get it. And I have not been able to put this game down. It is such a fun game. And yeah, I don't know.
Look at it. It looks interesting. Like, you see the different, like, vehicles, people running around, the costumes. I mean, one person kind of looks like the Arrow from the CW. Got snipers.
And that's the thing that's crazy about it. Like, one of the biggest things that when he was working on the H1Z1, King of the Kill, like, he was like, oh, we should, you know, use Unreal Engine 4. Like, we should make it look better. We should make it, you know, like, make it more realistic. And they were like, no, no, no. Like, you know, typical, like, big corporate type of a things. They're like, let's just get it out there and let's get it out as soon as possible. We'll do, you know, they'll do microtransactions for stuff and blah, blah, blah. And like, that was the big thing that a lot of people didn't like, is the fact that they put in microtransaction type stuff into it. I believe they removed it for King of the Kill, but it was like, oh yeah, you pay money and it'll like create a drop, but it's open to anybody.
Oh my God.
So, like, the thing about it is, like, they're like, yeah, you can pay a couple bucks and get a military drop, but there's no guarantee that you're going to be the one that actually picks up the stuff that's in the crate. Which is interesting because in PlayerUnknown's Battleground, like, once you're on the map, you will still hear a plane every so often fly overhead, and it does drop military crates. And it's funny because the best games and stuff in the game fall from these crates. Like, you can only get the military sniper rifles from those crates. You can only get a ghillie suit from the crate. And it's such a, like, well done, like, even in early access with the bugs that they have, it is so minute to compared to, like, what's out on H1Z1 that's been out for a really long time and so has been supposedly, like, final release.
So I'm curious, as far as the gameplay, like these weapons, is it something where you can lose it, or like what happens with that? Because like if you get that awesome sniper rifle, is it yours forever, or what is it like?
So the way that it works is like once you get it, you have it for that round. Like once you're dead and all that and you're out, like when you start again, you start just barehanded and that's it. Like the stuff that you look at, the stuff that you wear, the cosmetic stuff. So the helmets are actually armor that you pick up. But the jackets, the shirts, the pants, the shoes, and glasses and stuff like that, and gloves, it's all cosmetic stuff that you can find it in the game world. But as you go playing, you accumulate like battle coins or whatever it is. Like it's like a little in-game currency. And you unlock these crates that give you cosmetic stuff that you could wear. So it's really, really neat how, like, he's done this. And he sat there and he said, like, once the game hits final release, they're going to have microtransactions, but it's all going to be for cosmetic stuff. Like, you're not going to have an advantage going in. And the big thing that, like, everybody's hoping for, and I really do hope he gets a chance to do it, is they're planning on bringing this to the home consoles, which will be really cool to see that happen. Because I think this will be a great game for, like, console gamers.
Yeah, I was reading how they were talking about how it's a massive 8x8 kilometer island, and so how many people are we talking about in a game?
100 people.
Okay.
So 100 people in the game. Like they've already done a few patches and things like that here and there, that they've put in. So one of the big things that has been the big complaint that you see from people in it is that this thing, I have a monster system and it runs really crappy. And I mean, even me with my machine, like you can see, like there were certain parts where like if I got too close to like a big city, it would kind of stutter under 30 frames a second a little bit. It still has a good amount of like memory leaks and all that. But I mean, as they've been patching the game, they've been getting it to perform better and better and better. And one of the big things that a big complaint that people had early on was, when you're looking at your settings and all that, if you put like the foliage to like ultra, it put this tons of grass and stuff like that out on the fields. But the thing that people found out was like, oh, anybody that has it on very low, they don't see all that stuff. So you having ultra high, you're laying out in tall grass and you're thinking nobody can see me, when all of a sudden there's a dude that just takes a pop shot at you with a sniper rifle and kills you. And you're like, how in the world did this guy see me? And you realize, oh, he had his stuff on ultra low. I was just laid out in the middle of a flat field. They actually patched that recently where now everybody sees the dense foliage. It just changes the amount of like how clear the graphics look on the actual foliage, but everybody sees it now. And they're saying so that they, it won't affect performance. Like, you'll see it up to a certain distance. And that's another, like, kind of, like, big complaint right now is people, they're saying is, like, if you have an 8X scope or a 15X scope, you can zoom in and the view distance that what it draws out, all this grass, is less than what that scope can see. So somebody will be laid out in a field and you can see them from way out and you can take pop shots at them with a gun.
Now, as far as the weapon damage and stuff like that, is it, if you have like a sniper rifle and you shoot someone in the head, is that insta-kill? Is it shotgun close range insta-kill, stuff like that?
So this is the thing that has gotten some big, like, ups and downs. So he's trying to make it like, hey, these guns are supposed to work to their realistic counterparts. So shotguns, super deadly at close range. But you get a bit of distance out from your target and you'll hit them, but you're not going to do as much damage. And then it comes down to also, like, is your guy wearing a vest? Is your guy wearing a helmet? So the thing about it is that there's different levels of the equipment and each one gives you more armor. So helmets, level one helmet is basically a bicycle helmet. Level two is a military helmet. And then level three is this, like, riot crazy, like, it is a full metal helmet with a face guard that has, like, a slit for your eyes. So literally the level, and the way that he made it where it's realistic is you can have a level two helmet. And somebody can shoot you in the face, and it's like they're shooting at you with no armor on, which is realistic. The level three, this riot helmet is, since it has a metal face guard, you can take a shot in the face, and you'll survive a headshot. Now, the thing about it is there is one gun that is the most powerful sniper rifle and gun in the game, which is a AWM, I think is the name of it. It is a sniper rifle, a military-grade sniper rifle that takes 50 caliber rounds.
Woo.
So that gun, whether you shoot him in the head, like, it is a one shot in the head. I think it's a one shot in the chest, even with a level. I think the only one that is not an instant one shot kill in the chest is if you have a level three military vest. And even then, what it leaves you with of life is, like, you better hide because you're almost dead. You know, you pretty much have lost that level three vest and you're done. But what's interesting that they did is, and I've seen a lot of streamers that do this, is if you're wearing a vest and they shoot you in the legs or the arms, you will still take full damage because technically they're not covered by the armor. And it made a lot of sense when I saw it. Like, he's going for full-on realism with this thing.
As far as the maps and stuff, are there, like, different ones, or, like, is there something that's really unique? And my other question would be, do you ever run into it, since there's such a large map where – maybe if it's not fully 100 on 100, you're running around looking for people for a long time.
So the big thing with the way that they did it is it's one map right now. He's planning on doing multiple maps. But the big thing is that the stuff that's generated in the map is random every single time the map runs. And the thing that the game does is so that it forces all the players to come together is it will start the map, and then it's going to put a circle that's going to eliminate a big chunk of that map. And what it does is that it'll start this, like, ring that starts coming in, and it basically in PlayerUnknown Battleground, it looks like this, like, blue kind of, like, lightning-y. It's supposed to be radiation. So it basically circles in and then reduces the playable area up to a certain part. And then what it'll do is it'll then pick the next area that's, here's the next playable area, counts down from, like, a couple of minutes, and then shrinks that down. And then it keeps doing that until it literally will – it will always end in an open field. But every single time you play, completely random where it picks, like, this is where the end game is going to be. So you can sit there and parachute on the top of the map and be lucky enough that, hey, this circle is going to come to the top of the map. Or you can sit there and parachute in and go, oh, I only got, you know, 5 minutes initially to start finding stuff. I better find a car because I got to run 3 kilometers to get to the circle.
And it's 3 real kilometers, in-game kilometers. So yeah. That's a long run.
So it is like, yeah, you're sitting there and you're putting your weapons, you're tick, 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 tick. You're running for 5 minutes, just running across a field. And at any point, anybody can see you running on that field. I'm like, ooh, I'm going to shoot at this guy and take pop shots at you. It's
So it's really free for all. I mean, I guess if somebody really wants to be a jerk, they can team up or whatever. But for the most part, it's every man for himself.
And right, and that's the thing that I've liked about this game is it lets you do, you can queue up either by yourself, you can queue up with a partner, so you go a duo queue, or you can put, then queue up to four people in a squad, and then it's teams of four.
Can you still kill your squad?
Oh, yeah. Friendly fire is on. No. Apparently, let me tell you, it happened to me like where I was playing with Roger, and I was looting a building. And we're communicating, and he's like, hey, I'm going to go into the building that's next to yours. And I'm like, cool. And I come downstairs, and all of a sudden I hear a door open. Now, it puts a little friendly marker over the other character. I hear a door open, and I hear running, and I'm like, uh-oh, there's someone. You know, I'm thinking, oh, there's somebody in my building. All of a sudden I just see a dude whip around the corner, and my reaction was I had a shock, and I just turned and boom. And right when I shot, that's when I saw him drop to the ground, and I saw his player mark, and he's like, oh, man, you shot me. And I'm like, you told me you were going to the building next to me, not my building. And he was like, yeah, that was my bad.
that's a dangerous mistake.
That's a dangerous mistake. But the thing that I think is really cool that they do in this game is when you're playing solo, the moment they kill you, you're out of the game. When you're playing with either a partner or a squad, when they kill you initially, your guy drops to the ground, and you're, like, wounded. You're, like, knocked out, and you can still kind of crawl around, and you can be revived. So you got to kind of, like, kill the person twice type of a thing. But what makes an interesting tactic is you'll see a squad of people running, and you'll see, like, the one little straggler in the back, and you'll pick that guy off, and he's down in the ground. He's crawling towards his friend, and then it's like, oh, do I shoot and kill that guy, or do I leave him alive long enough for his friends to try and come back and revive him and use him as bait?
Nice.
So it is a really, like, tactful game when it comes down to it.
Is there any other healing besides reviving? Like, while
there is, like, yeah, there's bandages, and they have, like, you know, med kits and painkillers and energy drinks and stuff that you can revive yourself. Like, it's a really, like, anybody that has not, like, seen it, I say definitely go on Twitch and watch a streamer play it. And if it intrigues you enough, like, or if you play H1Z1 King of the Kill, like, that is a... This is the next evolution of that. Like, you'll probably never play H1Z1 King of the Kill after you play this. And if there's any advice I could tell people that are coming from H1Z1 King of the Kill is, do not jump out of a moving car because it will kill you. Like, that's the one thing that people hate about H1Z1 King of the Kill. Like, you could be in a police car going 95 kilometers an hour and jump out, and your guy just, like, boop, and pops out like nothing, and the car keeps rolling. In Battlegrounds, the moment you jump out of the car runs you over and kills you. And you, or if you're not going that fast and you jump out and the car doesn't hit you, you'll take damage from jumping out of a moving car, which is realistic. Like, let's face facts.
Nice, and you can get it on Steam for like 30 bucks.
Yeah. 30 bucks, dude. It is that, like, the thing that drove me crazy about it when it first drew my attention was the fact that the guy released it, I think, on either a Friday or a Saturday. And by Monday, they were saying that it had already made over $1 million.
Nice.
Like, yeah, in one weekend. And I think after a week and a half that it was out, they have over 1 million people that have bought the game. So it's crazy.
Nice. Well, I got to play a game. Well, I actually watched more of this than actually played it. And it's not quite as involved as your game, which is a game that you can continue playing, but... I was always a fan of full motion video games, even way back in the day when you had like the Panasonic consoles, and you had some of that in like PlayStation, even though most of the time it was only like a little bit of full motion video. But like on PC, you actually had a couple. I remember playing the X-Files full motion video game, and you know it was cool because they actually used the real actors. So that was cool, but usually the people who were, like, supposed to get killed or something were, like, you could tell the difference between the two. But, you know, I was always a fan of that. I just thought it was another type of game that you could enjoy, especially one where you're watching more than interacting. And it's funny because in Japan, there's a lot more games where you hardly do anything. You know, it might be, like, click here, answer this, do that. And I remember there was a person talk about how in America, most people want action. They need to feel like they're actually controlling everything. Hmm. So you see less and less of it. Maybe that's why full motion videos games didn't do that great. Or maybe it's because some of them look cheesy, because there's some that the acting is so bad. And then especially when they have to do graphics or stuff, it's like there's like a list of like some really, really bad full motion video games.
What was, now that you say that, like, was it Under a Killing Moon? I think was one that I used to love playing. It was like one of those Tex Murphy, like cop drama.
Oh yeah.
Cop, I think. Remember those? Oh man, those are, yeah, cheesy acting, but really good games though.
Yeah. And the things like even stuff like, the game that you play, like, I forgot the one, Wild Bill or something with the shooting. You know, that those were popular for a while.
Oh yeah.
You know, where you would shoot somebody and with the light gun, and then if you missed, there'd be like a little scene. Or what was the other one? Oh, they had Cops, where you're like going like along on the ride with cops, and then you're there shooting and stuff like that. So I mean, there's been a lot of different games out there. So we recently have a new game that came out that I got to see called Night Shift, and it's really cool because this is like new version. You know, it's kind of like, I'm not going to say like Telltale, because Telltale is, you have much more freedom and you can do actions and moves in it. In Night Shift, you're basically, this takes place in London, and you could tell right away, like the voices you hear, like French accents, English accents, German accents, but it looks really good. So when you're watching it, even from the beginning, it looks like good production. It doesn't look cheap. You know, they have fancy cars and, you know, sexy women, and you're going out. And the premise of it is you work as like a car park attendant. You know, you're just a guy sitting in a booth watching fancy cars, you know, people that park in this building. And apparently you're kind of smart. You know, you're good at making decisions, seeing the probabilities, the percentages of when things go down. Because they even show that because you're like studying from a book. And you get caught up in a heist that you didn't want to be in. But, you know, something happens in the heist. Of course, you could probably guess it goes wrong. And you have to get yourself out of it. And what's cool about this is it's simplistic, but it does it well. Like, when you watch it, like I watched just like one of the endings. There's up to 7 different endings. You know, some bad, some good. And of course, there's a best and worst. And when you just watch it, it's interesting enough. You know, it's not that long. I'd say maybe 30, 40 minutes if you do like the maximum amount of scenes. And you only have basically 2 choices. It'll be different things, but you have 2 choices. So it'll start off with a nice, good intro. You get introduced to it, but then there'll be simple things like someone will ask you, do something for me. And you may think to yourself, okay, well, I won't do it. Or you want to be a good guy, or you want to be lawful. But then later on in the game, you'll find out that maybe you didn't help this person, so they don't want to help you when you need it. And it's really cool because it's always only 2 choices, so it's not difficult, but you have to be pretty quick with it. So it might be like, you know, someone tells you, hey, take me here. And it's like, do you try to run away, or do you try, or you do what they say? A lot of it is if you're going to go along with the heist, or you're starting to fight against the heist. But then after that, it gets even more complicated because it kind of, you know, slowly introduces you to it. So it's not like super, super complicated choices. At first, it's really simple to get you used to the timing, how long you have, because you only have a few seconds. Later on, there's big things. It's not – one of the things that's really cool about this game is that I play a lot of these games where you have choices. A lot of them aren't what you would think. Like, you think, oh, this choice sounds like it's going to work, because in game world, in movie world, it'll work out. And it's like, no, sometimes you got to do something else. There's even points where you're like, where do I go? Do I go to this location because I think it might be there, or do I go to this location? And that will totally change the game. Now, as far as the ending, there's really only about 4 specific video-wise endings, because I actually watched all of them. And you get to the point where some of the final ones, the ending is the same. But there's different ways to get there. And when you watch the different videos, that's why I said the lengths can be different between if you do this, you go to a whole nother location, and there may be much more video and scenes than if you go this way, and then it's a much quicker path to whatever eventual ending you get. And like I said, the acting's pretty good. You know, look, I'm sure people critique it and say, oh, this person didn't act that well. But you got to put in as far as games. Like, it looks like something that could have been like a mini movie or something. and it's fun to play. It's only $12.99 on Steam. I mean, why not check it out? It's definitely worth it if you like full motion video games. Or, hey, look, if you just want to watch it on YouTube, you can go and watch it on YouTube. It's actually an interesting watch. I actually wanted to watch it, which, you know, if you go and look at other gameplays of full motion videos, sometimes it's like, it's painful to watch how cheesy it is. But this is done really well.
Yeah, it looks like, oh, not, yeah, like I see what you were saying about, like, it gives you the little choices and then, like, a timer and all that. That's kind of interesting where it's, like, even though it is full motion and, you know, people complain about the, oh, it's cheesy and blah, 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 like, it looks like it could be just a regular movie, you know, as opposed to, like, the old games back in the 90s, like the old Tex Murphy that was so pixelated. It was like, what in the world is that he's looking at? Like, you couldn't make out stuff, I remember.
Yeah, and I think that what really helps with this is how even they do when you select. Because, yeah, sometimes they'll do the thing where it's a one shot on the person and you have, a, you know, do I do this or do I do that? But even when you select it, you know, like, I mean, obviously technology helps that. But you know how back in the day, if you played one of those games, you'd have almost that little pause and it would take you out of the movie or whatever you're in because it was like a little delay. This one is seamless. So when you click something, it, you know, it's like a movie. They cut it well. So it cuts like a really real movie. It doesn't feel like, oh, it's a game, like pick up this and it's like chop, chop. And then you pick up something and it looks all awkward. It flows with the movie. And I think that's why you have two choices. It's already filmed. You know, it fits with the narrative of the story. No matter what you do, the story doesn't all of a sudden make less sense. Because that's another thing. Sometimes games mess it up where you're kind of going the right way. Or if you go off the beaten path, the story starts to sound – doesn't sound right. Because it's almost like, no, we really need you to go this way. In this game, it's not like that. Regardless of what you choose, the movie still flows from a narrative standpoint. And I think it does well. And I think the other point is just being out. Like, there's so much moving. There's, like, accidents and stuff like that. So there's a little money put into it. It's not like a sound stage. It doesn't look fake. You know, like the garage, you see all the cars there. You're on the street. There's a chase scene. You know, like I said, there's a car crash. So it looks good. Like, you're like, okay, I could buy this as a real movie, not someone just making something cheap and easy in a studio.
Yeah, I think that's going to come down to probably, like, really good writing where they probably thought of, like, we want to make it so that, like you said, like, really good writing, knowing where the point of, like, here's the cut for the edit, and then just seamlessly going on to the next scene. So, like, doing the end of that scene to the choice and then just going on so they knew exactly where to pace the edit in so that it basically just didn't have any, you know, like you said, it just seamlessly transitioned in, which must have been like, in thinking of that point of view, is like, that must have been a pain for the guy writing it because he had to like think of like, all right, you're going to choose yes, this is where it's going to start to go. Okay, you're going to choose no, this is where it's going to start to go. And then, like, as you say, making different choices where you go off the beaten path, keeping the story into like one arc where it all made sense. Cause yeah, that was a big thing with those old games of the 90s is that you'd make this like weird choice and then you're like, it would play the little movie clip and then you're like, wait, so how is it that happened? Because it makes no sense with how whatever else happened.
And that's another thing. I think that unlike some of these other games where you can quote unquote die, end or end the game early, this game isn't really like that. So I don't want to like give anything away, but it's not so much that there isn't consequences for your decisions. There definitely are. And the thing is, if you start going down the wrong path early, it's going to be impossible to get to the good ending because, like I said, they wrote it so that it matters. That was another thing. And I don't want to just say Telltale all the time, but look, I've been influenced by Telltale. So if I'm giving the wrong credit, you know, you guys can burn me alive for it. But they take the Telltale thing where people remember stuff. And in older full-motion video games, they didn't have that. It was basically, if you did something wrong, you would die right there, and then that's it. You have to either go back to the beginning or if they had some kind of save point or something. Or, it, like I said, it would mess up the game. Here, you're not, like, if you, let's say someone has a gun on you, and it's like fight or surrender. It doesn't necessarily, if fight means he shoots you, you're dead. But it's how they're gonna affect your gameplay later. So you get to keep playing the story, but everyone's gonna treat you differently. And you're not gonna be able to maybe like earn the confidence of somebody, or you may not end up with the type of interaction that you were expecting. Where if the surrender guy, they'll act different, they'll treat you different. But like I said, all these full motion video games, you can tell you're heading on a path. You know, let me not like make this out to be groundbreaking, revolutionary. You know where the game is going. So when you watch multiple versions of the game where people choose different things, you start to see, okay, either way, you're going to kind of head down this narrative point. But it has to be like that, especially when you're filming, or else this game would be like, you know, $100, not $12.99 on Steam.
That's interesting where, like you say that, so I wonder if not only they did it kind of like this from a narrative point, but also like it gives you an opportunity of like multiple playthroughs just to see all the different little kind of changes to the storyline. Because a big thing nowadays is like you want to give gamers a, you know, I'm getting the best bang for my buck type of a thing. You know, and if you do the typical, hey, I paid $60 for a game and I played it for 4 hours and I'm done, and it's like, all right, that wasn't worth me paying $60.
Yeah, I think that they definitely do. I think with the $12.99 price, it's less than 1 month of another game. You know, you can say, oh, that, you know, but if you buy a game $60, you know, whatever, you're gonna expect a lot more. And here, obviously, the game is not that long. Like I said, maybe 30, 40 minutes. Maybe a little bit longer, but a playthrough could be about that long when you go through everything. And what happens is you get to the point where when you do something, you want to try and see what the character does the other way. Because like I said, the acting's decent. So if you're the kind of person that wants to go along with a heist, it's going to be different. And if you care about stories and how things unfold, you want to go see it. So you'll want to go back and be like, oh. And what's interesting, like I said, it's interesting to watch. Like, you're not bored sitting there like, oh, my God, this story's stupid. Won't you hurry up and do something? No, it's actually an interesting watch. It's a simple, you know, kind of heist goes wrong type movie, but it's interesting enough that you want to play it and someone else would be interested in watching it with you. So for a $12.99 price point, I mean, seriously,
that's not bad. Yeah.
Definitely worth picking it up. And what I really hope is that this will lead to more, because right now it has very positive 160 reviews on Steam. And people are liking it. This is a new company that's making it. It's like a little indie company that did it. So it's not like some gigantic company. And I hope that it'll pick up and more people do it. Maybe this will be like the next incarnation of the Telltale type games where they're using live video, which to me is an awesome, incredible prospect. Mm-hmm.
That's the big thing nowadays is, man, there's some indie companies that are coming up with some amazing games. And they're coming out of like left field. And it's all people that like really liked, you know, specific games when they were growing up. And they're like, this is how I want to do it. This is my vision for it. And, you know, it's just blowing up now on the scene, which is, it's a good day to be a gamer.
Exactly. Definitely.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to break the meta on this episode here.
Oh,
so I brought the kind of like show off one of my games that I got early on when I started my collection. So the thing that's funny about this game is it's a dungeon crawling board game, but it is a board game. This just makes something funny. Based on a video game that's based on a board game. So that's just to throw you in the loop. It is a board game based on a video game that's based on a board game.
Gotcha.
The name of the game is Super Dungeon Explorer. As you can see here. Now, what's really cool about it is it does the typical little chibi thing done by Cool Mini or Not and Soda Pop Miniatures, which two companies that anybody that knows anything about board games, they make amazing miniatures to the game. Now, the later versions of Super Nintendo Dungeon Explorer that they came out with, including expansions and all that, all the little miniatures were pre-put together. This bad boy, the original, all the miniatures came apart, and you had to glue them together. Now, when they sat there and they asked, why did they do this? They said, because you can get more dynamic positions of the miniatures when you have to glue them apart. If you sit there and you look at like things like Warhammer 40K, like you can tell, you can see you get much better positions of the things, like more action type scene. But because the community, when the game came out, was like, yeah, so I hated spending 4 hours gluing all these miniatures together before I could sit there and play it. Like, they listened and then they started making a single mold miniatures. Now, what's interesting here is, to kind of give you an idea, the way that they made it, I don't know how much you'll be able to see this on camera, they basically made all the bad guys in red, all the heroes in gray. I was crazy enough that, as being one of my early projects, I went, not only did I put these bad boys together, it intrigued me enough to spend, and I kid you not, this was probably about 3 months worth of work, to not only glue these guys together, but I actually painted all the miniatures. Nice. So this is like the main dragon of the first one. And it's really cool because one of the things that's interesting, here's like one of the mini bosses I did. So big dude carrying a huge like bone of a club here. This took me months to do. And it was crazy because this is literally like my first like kind of like painting project that I took on. And it was a doozy.
You painted that yourself?
I painted that myself, yes.
Wow, that's a nice job, bro.
So the thing that's the kicker, the thing that's the kicker about it is, so those were the bosses. When I show you the size of the miniatures that you get in game, and this goes to show you how much of a pain in the butt it was. So that is legitly one of the miniatures. And when I talk about these things are tiny.
Wow.
So size comparison here. Here's the dude. There's a quarter. So that goes to show you how tiny these little miniatures were. I was crazy enough that I sat there and painted all these things.
That's like surgeon steady hand dedication.
Oh, dude, that was – so the funny thing is I was like, how the heck am I going to paint these things that are so tiny? And I started looking online because I said like, oh, you know, it'd be cool to paint them because it'd be nice to have like a custom, you know, a custom set once I was said and done. And I found online that the thing that they sat there and they said the best thing to use is one of these, an old empty medicine case. You basically put double-sided tape on it, and you stick the miniature down, and now you have a thing that you can manipulate in your hand and move it around so you can paint and not have to hold the miniature and touch any of the paint and all that.
Smart.
Smart idea. Let me tell you, would I ever do it again? Heck no. Like, you're talking, this was three to four months of spending 2 to 3 hours a night just painting. But that aside, the game itself is really, really fun in how they did it, because you set up the map based on how many players. So it is an all versus one. One person plays the console, which is the bad guy, which is interesting that they named the bad guy the console. It has a couple of double-sided boards, and you choose what sides of the boards you want to use. And then the way that it works is, depending on how many players, how many heroes are playing, is how many tiles get laid out. And the way that it works is the console puts the first one, players put the second one, console puts the next one, player. So they keep going back and forth until the amount of tiles is out for the amount of heroes. Then the console gets to pick where the loot treasure chests spawn and where the creature spawn points are, which is kind of cool because the creature spawn points are different based on which creatures you kind of have. Like, this is kind of like one of them. It's like a little kind of like temple with a skull on the top and stuff like that, little crystals around it.
Now, those boxes are yours. They didn't come like that, right?
Yeah, no, I put all these in these boxes just to separate them. So, like, you get these, like, little, like, treasure chests with that you could put in and things like that.
And what's, like, plastic?
It's plastic, yeah. They're all plastic. The little mimics that look like, you know, little green with the tongue sticking out type of a thing. And it's really like interesting to like play out. So they, what they've done essentially with each of the expansions that come out, the first one is essentially like they're little like dragon based, creatures. And then each expansion that's come out, they've come with like more rock based, you know, like elemental type ones. They have rock based one. They have an undead one. And what's really funny about the game is as they've done the Kickstarters for the games and all that, they've added extra heroes. They've made heroes based on like actual heroes from like video games and stuff like that. So like they have a guy who's, I believe he comes in the undead set and he's a undead hunter and he's basically a guy wearing like leather armor and his weapon is a whip. Obvious like homage to Simon Belmont, you know, stuff like that. And it's really, really neat how like they've done that with the characters. And like you'll look at it and you're like, oh yeah, I know what game, like what game or what book that's from and da da da. It's really, really cool, really, really fun. And it's neat because as it, you play it, as the turns go, you as the console get a certain amount of basically tokens to spawn creatures. So each creature has a cost in tokens. So you can spawn a certain amount of creatures. And then once the heroes all have their turns, now you get all those tokens back, you can spawn even more. So like the thing that's cool about it is you get that set amount every turn. So that the bigger monsters cost more tokens to summon. So you have to maybe wait two turns before you can summon the bigger monster. And it's really, really like fun and trying to get them to do, you know, to get to the end game, which is the boss spawns out and then they have to kill the boss. And all the time that I've had it, like people really compare this game to the old school, like HeroQuest. The only big difference about the old HeroQuest was HeroQuest had a set map, set, you know, thing, story and all that. And you had to make up the story as you went along. This one, like it's, you basically pick it and you can go. So the replay value on this is great. And it's really, it, what intrigued me when I first got it was the fact that it was like the whole premise of like, it's a board game based on a video game based on a board game. And I was like, okay, that sounds weird, but funny at the same time.
Yeah.
And what's neat is like, when you look at the little player cards that show your, what, how many action points and stuff I have, the little movement points is like a little D-pad, and the action, how many actions you can do is like a little arcade button. Let me see if I could. Yeah, you can barely, you can barely see it, but you can see kind of like the little, there's the little D-pad on the top, and then like the little action buttons just to the right of it. It's kind of cool. And then like your little heart is like a little heart, and then you can carry around a certain amount of potions and stuff like that. But it's really, really well done. Like they, I think like the inspiration that they had for this initially, he was like, oh, he wanted to do something that was kind of like Gauntlet, but on a board game. So like it's kind of neat because you'll see a lot of the initial characters is like you have a warrior and you have a dwarven fighter and you have, you know, a wizard and you have an archer. So really, really neat game. Like I've enjoyed the heck out of that game. It's a really like, good old time with friends. If you really want to have fun, like get together, have a few drinks and then play this and it really gets crazy. Cause you lose control. Like it's like killing monsters, getting loot. Ooh, what did I get for loot? And it's such a fun game.
Nice. You know, most of the time I end up, being only video cause I don't really play that many board games. Not like you, not like your awesome collection. But I actually got a chance to play a board game at my friend's house. So I love Rick and Morty, so does she. She picked up the Rick and Morty Mr. Meeseeks Box of Fun Dice and Dares game. And it's pretty cool. You know, it's kind of like akin to like almost like a Yahtzee type game. But of course you could expect like the crazy foulness that you would get from the TV show. So it's pretty simple. Basically the idea is that you get cards which are, you're trying to get like a request. So the request will be something like, help me find a good parking spot, or I want to be, you know, a more complete woman or something like that. And when you look at the cards, what they'll have is they'll have a picture of what dice you need to roll so that you can accomplish it, and they'll tell you how many points it is. So it might show a picture of three sixes. or it might show a picture of two sixes, two twos, two fours, and of course, the harder it is, you'll get more points. So then what happens is that you roll the number of dice based on the request. And then when you roll the dice, if you don't get it, then you end up getting, you know, you could do a dare, like if you don't meet the request. Hmm. But the thing that makes it interesting, and I guess some people don't like it, but I mean, if you like the show, it makes sense. You hit the little button on the top of the box, which actually is a functioning button. And when you hit it, then you get, you know, you pull out the Mr. Meeseeks. And the Mr. Meeseeks will give you things like allow you to roll again. Or if you roll sixes, roll, you get another roll. Or redo your entire roll or something like that. But here's the thing. Every time that you don't complete your objective, which sometimes I've gotten lucky and I've rolled, you know, like all the sixes. But if you don't, those Mr. Meeseeks count against you. And after a while, you use less and less dice because you have to roll to counter how many of the Mr. Meeseeks you get. So after you get too many Mr. Meeseeks, it'll kill you. Because in the show, they hate their existence. So they want to help you achieve their goal. And if they don't, then either they want to kill you so they can end their existence. So what makes it fun is that, you know, you have that added part to it. Now the dares, you only get usually like 1 point or something like that. And it might say, you know, it'll be like crazy stuff because, like I said, Rick and Morty. The dares will be something like describe your sister, like how sexy your sister is. So imagine you're with a group. I think you can play with up to 8 people in this game. So imagine having to do that. Like they'll give you a time limit, like 30 seconds. So you're there trying to describe that to your friends. Or they'll have you like do dances or things like that. Nothing too crazy, but this is not a game for kids. You know, the stuff that they have you doing and saying is not for kids. So overall, when you finish a request, you get a new one. And the point is that the winner gets the most total points. Like I said, you get like 1 point or something for the dares. You could get 3, 4, 5 points, whatever, 6 points from doing the request. So, I mean, it's fun. I've actually read online before the show to see, like, what some people think. You know, it's not mixed because it's more positive than negative. But you have some people that don't like the dares or they don't like this, and they're comparing it to, like I said, Yahtzee and games like that. But, I mean, I think it's kind of like you have to like Rick and Morty. You have to like that style. And then it's fun. I mean, I had fun. I was playing with 5 people. It was funny seeing people. Even the requests are funny, you know, because it's like you would expect if you could ask for something, it would be something grand, like make me a millionaire. But like in the episode with Mr. Meeseeks, it's not. Sometimes they ask for something stupid, like make me a perfect sandwich. but, you know, it's fun. The dares are cute. You know, they're raunchy. It's also a good game. I guess anything's good if you're drunk. But
yeah, that's true.
If you're drunk or drinking and a little more loose and you play around with the dares and stuff like that, you know, it's a pretty fun game. And I would recommend it especially if you're a fan of Rick and Morty, especially with season 3 right upon us. It's definitely worth picking it up.
Right. I forgot about that. I need to see that. I think that they've only done, what, like the first couple of episodes or something like that?
Yeah, they trolled us with that little April Fool's. They were going to do Samurai Jack, but instead they put out that, and there hasn't been a new one since.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, like, with games like this is you're there's usually no middle ground to the game. People either really like it or really hate it. And I find it happens to be like that with, like, especially dice-based games like this. And the reason being is a lot of the people that hate it is, like, it's that luck factor of, like, you never know what you're going to roll and blah, 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 blah. I think the only other thing that I see that usually has people give a negative review, especially if it's something that, like, you can get knocked out really, really quickly, and then everybody else is playing for, like, another half hour, and you're like, all right, so I'm just sitting here doing nothing. Like, that's usually what will give something like that negative reviews. But I tend to see usually it's the luck factor. I love dice games because it's like you never know what's going to happen.
You, yeah.
Yeah, you can have that, like that, like you said, the Yahtzee of the, you roll the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Like, how often is that going to happen? You know?
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting is that when we played our first game, no one got killed by the Mr. Meeseeks. So it's not like it's something where you immediately, it's so easy to get killed. I don't know if somebody would consider that a negative or a positive. I think it's a positive because it allows you to play the game. The total game time is only like 20 or 30 minutes because it's not like a ton of points. I think you can like, it's flexible. You can even make it how many points you need to win. So if you want to make it longer, you can make it higher so you have more to do. But I guess that would also make it easier for you to get killed. But yeah, the way they have it now, like I said, 20, 30 minutes, it's funny. Like I said, it's not easy to die. So the chances of you, by the time someone would die, the game would be close to over. You know, so many people would have already done requests or enough dares to earn points, and they'd be close. So you're not going to be sitting there waiting, you know, 20, 30 minutes while everyone else is having fun.
Yeah, that's a good thing there, like a good design, because that's like the biggest thing. Like I've seen, let me tell you, there have been some games out there that they have a set amount of rounds. And you think like, oh, it's 6 rounds. Like, oh, what do we have to do? Oh, everybody takes their turn and that's 1 round. Cool. And you think like, oh, it's going to be a short game. I was hearing, I can't remember what the name of the game was, but it was like one of these games where it was 6 rounds, but they're like, dude, it took them 8 hours to play the game. Ooh. And they say, because like when you first start playing the first rounds, there's not a lot of stuff that you do, but it's like one of those like engine building mechanics. So as the rounds go, everybody's turn takes longer and longer and longer to do it. So like one of the guys is like, yo, I seriously did my turn, got up from the table, went outside, had a beer, like watched a TV show, came back, and there was still like 2 people to go before it got back to me.
Yes, you know? that takes you so far out. I mean, you want to be engaged in the game at all times.
And that's the big thing. Like, I'm the type of person, like, just like a video game, like, I'll sit down and I'll throw 8 hours at a game. But if I'm sitting there and I, like, do my thing and say, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and then it's like I'm sitting there like just, okay. And not doing nothing, and I'm not getting any more information or any points or anything out of it, that is the longest, like, bit of, like, okay, can we get this over with? Somebody shoot me, please, type of a thing. Like, that is it's bad in video games. It is horrific in board games. And, I mean, I can tell you as a person that I just love gaming in general, both board and video. Like, and I've known you for God knows how many years. Like, when you make that transition to, like, to add in the board games, like once you get that bitten by the bug, boy, it's hard to let go of that one, man.
Oh yeah,
I can tell you because you will find stuff. There is stuff out there for every type of gamer, to the super thinky, to the super mathy, to the hey, it's a cool theme, to hey, let's just play something for 20-30 minutes. Like that's what I love about the board game stuff, is you have everything from very casual all the way to like the meatiest of meaty games out there. You know, hey, I got a weekend to kill. Let's play this board game. Like, literally, you can find that. but that's, yeah, that sounds really, really funny. I have to give that a look because it looks really, really interesting. But, yeah, that looks like that is show number 2 for us, it looks like, my friend.
Woo! On our way.
In the books. On our way. We're going.
98 till we get to episode 100.
98 to go. Come on. We can do this. but as always, guys, thanks for spending the time with us. Stay curious out there. Keep on gaming and stay geeky, guys. Until next time, I'm Randy. That's J.A.
Peace out.